You are listening to the ADIS Journals podcast.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the Pulmonary Therapy podcast on COVID-19, research and real-world experiences from the editorial board. My name is Christopher Votrino, and I'm the managing editor of the journal. And together with a number of the journal's editorial board members, we have compiled clips submitted by the board who describe their experience over the past year of the COVID-19 pandemic. The editorial board describe how COVID-19 impacted their research and how the initial clinical response changed over the course of the year in terms of treatment, PPE, and policy changes. We hope you found the podcast informative and useful.
Hi, everybody. My name is Kai Michael B. I am a pulmonologist from Germany, right from Germany in Wiesbaden. I am the medical director of the INSAF Respiratory Research Institute, and I also lead a private pulmonology practice. I am one of the editors of the journal Pulmonary Therapy. So, can you tell us how COVID has impacted your research? COVID had quite a striking impact on my work, both as a clinician but also as a researcher. Now, as you may know, in my institute, we do a lot of clinical trials in obstructive airway diseases, namely asthma and COPD. So there was a lot of that work that was delayed, put on hold, or even sometimes abruptly discontinued due to the outbreak of the pandemic. So there was a great deal of uncertainty and also quite a period where we actually totally had to readjust our organization of research there, taken together with the fact that many patients were quite insecure when the pandemic started, how to behave, how they would be continuing with their visits and so on. So it was quite a big interruption of our normal work. Second question, how did COVID impact your clinic during the initial outbreak? Well, there were a lot of measures that had to be installed during the initial outbreak. First of all, we reduced measurements with the potential of aerosol generation, like forced spirometry, particularly airway challenge and sputum induction, stuff like that. We were starting to equip staff, but also ourselves, of course, with personal protective equipment. And well, after a while, we got used to this new situation. And then, of course, with the precautions and also some evidence coming up that certain measures could be installed to actually minimize the risk of infection or spread of COVID would be effective. After this came through, we were more and more confident to perform measurements also with our patients on site. So currently we're in a situation where we are doing most things quite regularly and quite normally, but under, of course, a strict regime of precautionary measures. And third question, what lessons have been learned so far? Well, both as a researcher and as a clinician, the most positive, of course, lesson of the last year was the rapid development of a very effective vaccine. In fact, different very effective vaccines. I think that was really a type of a best way or best world scenario that this happened so far, so fast. And we were able to roll out vaccines already at the end of 2020. Although, of course, the logistical challenges seem to be far more important than the medical aspects of vaccination. But that's something, of course, another lesson that we need to learn. What I found quite disappointing was the relatively poor outcome of actual COVID treatments. So the clinical trials performed a number of agents that provided some hope of efficacy versus COVID-19. They have been largely disappointed, and also the quality of research in total sometimes was quite disappointing. So there were many studies with few patients, quite often underpowered, not properly enrolling, not properly organized, and also structured clinical trial protocols. So I think it's very important. A lesson to be learned is that we need to be better prepared and we need to have protocols and platforms installed in case of pandemics.
Hi, my name is Nazia Chowdhury. I'm an interstitial lung disease specialist in Manchester in the United Kingdom. And I am also a research lead for interstitial lung disease in Manchester. So one of the first questions is, how has COVID impacted my research? Well, during the first wave in March, we were very much all redeployed to the wards because of the sheer number of patients on our wards. So initially, there was a massive impact on our research. All our research, particularly in idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, was put on hold because all our research staff were also redeployed to the wards. This has had a massive impact, obviously, on the access of research trials for our patients. But similarly, our patients were also shielding and were told to stay away from the hospital and stay safe and stay at home. So our patients also weren't very keen on coming to the hospital for their research trials. Our focus very much shifted to the recovery trial and delivering COVID-related research. And certainly Manchester is one of the highest recruiters in COVID-related research in the United Kingdom. But as we came out of the first wave, even though we're now into our second wave, thankfully, the impact on research hasn't been as great. So research for patient need, particularly related to idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, where our patients don't have any other treatment options, is allowed to continue. So we are certainly continue to recruit to the GALACTIC trial, and we have a number of patients who have recently been screened and recruited to that. And unfortunately, the Galapagos trial was put on hold. So hopefully we're hoping to get back on track with our research and invite our patients in a safe environment to continue with regards to access to research trials. So the next question is, how did COVID impact my clinic during the initial outbreak? Well, again, unfortunately, in the first wave, all our clinics were cancelled for the first few months, just because of the sheer number of patients we had as inpatients on the wards in March. But thankfully, from July onwards, we have been able to reinstate our interstitial lung disease clinics, but we've reinstated them in different ways. We are certainly working very differently now during this COVID pandemic. All our clinics are now virtual. We are using virtual platforms where we can phone our patients with video consultations and assess our patients virtually, negating the need to bring our patients to big, busy waiting rooms. In Manchester, we have approximately 10 clinics. 10 clinic rooms going on at the same time in a small confined area in the morning and the afternoon. And you can imagine that would be in excess of 100 patients in the morning and afternoon. And certainly we can't socially distance. And so most of our clinics are now virtual. We're inviting patients that we're concerned about for face-to-face consultations. COVID had a massive impact on our lung function capacity, again, due to the AGP, aerosol generating procedures. We had to have increased time between our lung function procedures. And so that really reduced our capacity. We've used innovative ways of increasing our lung function capacity by working out of different areas around the trust, providing lung function and also providing lung function in community hospitals so that patients can come elsewhere for their lung function. And slowly but surely, as we come out of the pandemic, we are increasing our capacity. Obviously, we are all wearing full PPE in our clinics. with masks and gloves and aprons. And we are very much socially distancing our patients so that we are timing their attendance to clinics so that there is minimal contact with other people. So the next question is, how is this initial reaction to the pandemic developed over time and what lessons have been learned? Well, certainly, thankfully, for interstitial lung disease, one of our key thoughts was to continue our access to treatments for our patients who have debilitating symptoms as well as bad prognosis. For example, our patients with idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. So we have maintained access to antifibrotics by performing virtual clinics, by relying on our local physicians to make sure that they've done all the lung function and the blood tests so the patient is ready when they come to see us. We are performing a one-stop shop for our patients, particularly our new patients. We're able to perform our new patient assessments in a non-COVID area in our hospital, so patients can come and feel safe. They can feel safe that they're away from our COVID areas. We adhere to full PPE procedures with hand gel and masks so our patients feel safe. And so we have learned that we can maintain our outpatient practice as much as possible during this pandemic. And certainly we have not cancelled all our outpatient activity and tried to resume and very much have tried to catch up with our outpatient activity. For interstitial lung disease, thankfully, there have been some policy changes. So, for example, in the UK, you always had to have an up-to-date lung function for prescribing antifibrotics because we have a restriction with an FVC of 50 to 80%. And thankfully, NHS England agreed that as long as that lung function was in 12 months, that we could use historic lung function. And that was really to the benefit of our patients to ensure that they got timely access to treatments, particularly antifibrotics. We perform a lot of virtual monitoring clinics, so our pharmacists and our specialist nurses perform a lot of virtual monitoring clinics so that we can maintain safe prescribing of immunosuppressants such as mycophenolate and our antifibrotics. So all in all, the COVID pandemic has been very challenging, but I think we have worked our way through. We have provided our patients, on an outpatient perspective, safe care so that they can have continued care in our interstitial lung disease service. We are trying to, we are now seeing light at the end of the tunnel, and hopefully with the vaccination rollout, we will see the case numbers of COVID in the community decrease so our patients feel confident that they can come to the hospital for their clinic appointments. But certainly COVID will change our future way of working, and we will work more virtually in the future, as well as with our patients, but also from an educational perspective as well.
So hello, I'm Timothy Craig, Dr. Timothy Craig. I'm from Penn State University in Hershey, which is in Pennsylvania, USA. I'm an allergist immunologist in a pulmonary group. My focus on rare diseases, alpha-1 antitrypsin, hereditary angioedema, and common variable immunodeficiency. In addition, the majority of my work, despite specializing in orphan diseases, is actually in asthma. I've been doing this for 25 years. We have a large section of allergy in the pulmonary group, and I think we provide really good services. So one of the questions that came up was, how did COVID affect our research? So, you know, it's been strange over the year, a few months. So at first, everything shut down. But then what happened, we were able to start recruiting patients for clinical trials, phase 2 and 3s. And actually, I thought it worked out well because a lot of patients actually had free time. They didn't have to go to work or they were working from home. And so it was easy to recruit patients to come into our clinical trials. Unfortunately, any other trial where there wasn't any benefit to the patients, such as phase 4s and some just laboratory collection, went poorly, and we had to cease recruitment for those studies and actually had to stop them. In addition, we were doing some basic research work on microRNA, and unfortunately we had to stop that too. However, we finally got that going about 3-4 months ago. So right now we're back up in our basic research. Also on, we've continued for clinical research. And lastly, for the phase fours and other studies that really have no benefit to a patient, we've been able to start them about a month ago. So in some ways it impacted us, but in some ways it actually worked out well for us. You know, similarly for clinic, you know, how it impacted our clinic, we went 100% virtual at first. Unfortunately, with that, we had to stop doing pulmonary function tests and almost all our procedures. And with that, our income dropped significantly. And the amount of patients that we saw stayed, it's just that the reimbursements for telehealth was much less. However, we did really well. We switched to a platform, an official platform called Amwell. And so actually, almost 100%, I shouldn't say, I think it was 95% were actually on a telehealth platform, which allowed far better research, reimbursement than just a phone conversation with a patient. So I think we did good on that conversion, but then we started opening up once we got over the first wave and we opened up and we decided to do 50-50, 50% clinic and 50% telehealth, so that we could have more procedures. And that's worked out well. My no-show rate's been minimal, but my colleagues had a fair amount of no-shows. And in fact, if you look at the data, there is less no-shows for telehealth than there was for in face-to-face clinic. So we're still now, even though we're not in a, we're on a another wave, but even between these two waves or surge, whatever you want to refer to it as, we still are 50-50 because those statistics demonstrating that people are more likely to show up for a telehealth visit. So it's been an interesting time. I personally prefer face-to-face, and I am going to be moving in that direction as fast as I can. Probably by July, I'll do only face-to-face, but I know my colleagues, some of them enjoy telehealth more, and they'll probably still stay in that that 50-50 ratio. One of the things with this, though, is that we still haven't got our spirometry and some of the other testing we do, exhaled nitric oxide, up. So because of not having the proper filters in our spirometer and not having a room that is a negative pressure. So that's going to be that is a large part of our income, and we'll have to some way find a way to modify that. Not only is it income, though, for following COPD and asthma patients without spirometry is, for me, very difficult. So, you know, I think how we've really kind of emerged from this is, you know, from the beginning of the pandemic to now, is that we've really gathered confidence that we can do telehealth and feel good about it and feel that we're doing a good job. So that's pretty rewarding. It has, however, impacted our bottom line, which is, you know, in a university, that's very important. We have to support our employees and everything else. And but I think the majority of us, now that we're vaccinated, at least feel a lot more confident, you know, moving back into the face-to-face visits. I maybe that's a false sense of security in some ways, but, you know, it's nice too to be able to have some face-to-face meetings. It's nice to be able to drink a cup of coffee in my office, which is a shared office, the clinical office at least. And I think for my research nurses, it's really been a nice building of confidence for them now that they're vaccinated, and the same with our clinic nurses. Unfortunately, not all our clinic nurses have got vaccinated, but our policy in the hospital, much to my dismay, is that you can't ask anybody if they've been vaccinated because of a HIPAA violation. But I'm I do think that if we continue to vaccinate like the federal government and United States wants us to, that come the summer, it may be very appropriate to start doing everything we have in the past done before the pandemic. So good opportunity, good learning. Sad for our patients we've lost. We lost quite a few here, mainly more family and friends than actually my patients. But from everything bad, come some good points. So with that, you know, I wish you all good luck, and please be safe out there. And I hope that these times, even though they've been trying, that you've gained some fortune from it. And I guess fortune is sounds like more a gain, but you've at least obtained some information to better your life and what you do in your clinic and your research. So thank you for this opportunity and have a great day.
Hello, my name is Dr. Alan Kaplan, a family physician from Toronto, Canada. I'm the chair of the Family Physician Airways Group of Canada, a vice president of the Respiratory Effectiveness Group, and an honorary professor of primary care research of the Observational Pragmatic Research Institute in Singapore. How has COVID impacted my research? Well, clearly in-person studies are on hold. Virtual assessments, however, do allow surveys and behavioral research. Initially, the issues are mostly of COVID on respiratory issues. I think our next big issue is going to be in primary care about how we deal with long haulers. How did COVID impact my clinic during the initial outbreak? Well, clearly we had to have screening done before anybody was actually seen, although most things were done virtually initially, and the government did step up to create virtual fee codes. We used masks and goggles and hand washing for low risk, moving up to PPE and N95 for people with high risk. More recently, we've reinstituted spirometry testing with screening done first, the rooms cleaning post-op, and PPE for the staff as well. How has this initial reaction to the pandemic developed over time? Well, clearly we learned about social distancing. We learned concern about both aerosol and surface spread. We learned that asymptomatic carriers can and will spread the illness. We know that people are the most infectious before they become sick or early in the illness. The risk of severe COVID is clearly an important issue. Age, obesity, smokers who tend to have more ACE receptors, cardiovascular illness, COPD, diabetes, etc. Interestingly, though it's not related to ACE inhibitors, it's not related to inhaled corticosteroid use. So we really shouldn't change anything in terms of prevention. And actually, the best thing to do is keeping patients controlled in their conditions to prevent the severe COVID. And lastly, of course, we have vaccinations, which are not quite being done as frequently or as comprehensively across the population as they are, as they should be yet. But that's our hope for the future with respect to COVID-19. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Dr. Marcus Kennedy, and I'm a consultant respiratory physician and interventional pulmonologist at Cork University Hospital, Ireland. My area of interest is lung cancer and interventional pulmonology. The first question is, how has COVID impacted my research? COVID has impacted my research. Our group has a research interest in bronchoscopy, including single-use bronchoscopy, and we were investigating this new technology prior to COVID pandemic. COVID pandemic has brought this technology to the forefront. There are a number of clinical scenarios where single-use flexible bronchoscopes have advantages, and reasons for this include ease of mobility, allowing bronchoscopy in the ICU, bronchoscopy in the emergency department, and emergency bronchoscopy outside the healthcare facility. And all these indications were brought to the forefront with the COVID pandemic. These scopes are practical, allowing out-of-hours bronchoscopy, allowing bronchoscopy at the end of a day list where staff are not required to clean scopes. These also allow weekend bronchoscopy where staff are not available to clean scopes. They also are used in specific scenarios, including an immunocompromised patient and a patient with prion disease, where in the past a reusable scope would have to be destroyed after being used in a patient with prion disease. They also are important for scope training, for veterinary procedures, and large animal and cadaveric research. particularly in the era of COVID. These scopes have advantages in that they don't need to be cleaned. They are completely sterile when put into the patient. And there is a concern that a reusable scope may cross-contaminate COVID from one patient to another. In patients with COVID, the advantage of not having to clean a scope would reduce the risk of contamination from the patient with COVID to the healthcare worker who is cleaning the scope. The next question is, how did COVID impact your clinic during the initial outbreak? As a respiratory physician, I was at the forefront of looking after sick patients with COVID. Access for other respiratory patients to services, including lung cancer patients and COPD patients, was clearly negatively impacted at the outset of the COVID pandemic. How has this initial reaction to pandemic developed over time, and what lessons have been learned? Our hospital group was at the forefront of wave 3 of COVID in Ireland from January to February 2021. Our hospital group became involved in international studies in COVID-19 treatment. Our group learned how to separate COVID and non-COVID care and thus maintain critical non-COVID services, including lung cancer.
And that brings us to the end of our pulmonary therapy podcast on COVID-19, research and real-world experiences from the editorial board. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our editorial board members who contributed, Drs. Kai Michael B., Nazia Chowdhury, Timothy Craig, Alan Kaplan, and Marcus Kennedy. Thank you very much.
You are listening to an ADIS podcast. You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS Podcast with your preferred podcast provider, or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements, please read the article on the journal website.